Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast through iTunes.
Hello there, Mark.
Hey, Frankie.
What? Today we have a guest joining us in the next segment of the show. We have Sam Gugino, who is a contributing editor to Wine Spectator magazine. He's been a restaurant critic. He's been a chef. He's an interesting guy. And he's going to come and talk to us about olive oil, and he's going to talk to us about Thanksgiving. And we opened our new restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. And Stage Left Restaurant is a pretty high-end, rather adult affair. We get kids in there once in a while, but not very often.
Well into fancy schmancy.
Well into fancy schmancy, exactly. But the new place that we've opened, it's not exactly a family restaurant, but it's certainly, you know, it's not inexpensive, but it's certainly a lot less expensive than Stage Left, and it is kind of family friendly. I mean, we don't have high chairs or booster seats or anything like that, but there are people coming in with kids a lot, and I really like it. We have no tablecloths on the table, though it is very elegant, and it has fireplaces and a beautiful view and all. But it's very interesting to me to see how many people have come with their kids, and it's really nice to be able. And we have corner banquettes, and I love that kids, like parents, sort of like to corner their kids,
trap them in there between each other.
And I think this is very interesting, and we have a, you know, we have a policy in either restaurant, as long as your kid's well behaved, that we love to have your kids in. But there's been quite a bit of hubbub. There's an article in the New York Times a while back about restaurants clashing with parents over rowdy kids, and this is talking about more downscale restaurants than we, you know, family style restaurants or cafes.
Listen, even not in restaurants, I clash with parents over bratty kids, you know.
Well, it's an interesting debate because we have a lot of friends, obviously, who own restaurants of a lot of different stripes, and this can really cause.
Right, and again, Francis is saying that the kids are coming into our restaurant, but it's the occasional kid, and it's usually a more of an adult child than a.
But in coffee shops and preteen casual restaurants all around the world, I mean, you know, I go, kids are welcome, adults are welcome, everyone's welcome. But there was quite a hubbub that was brewing in Chicago when a local restaurateur, the owner of A Taste of Heaven, Dan McCauley, posted a sign that said, "Children of all ages have to behave and use their inside voices when coming to A Taste of Heaven." And he did this in response to a number of incidents where kids were, as he describes them, running up against the display cases and hurling themselves at them while their parents sipped a latte and just watched it happen. Now,
we've all seen that happen. Okay,
yeah, when your kid's exploding and you're like, and your method of parenting is, you know, just let him scream until he screams himself out.
Right, he'll get it out.
And I'm fine with that in your living room.
Right.
You know, but I'm not fine with that when I'm sipping my latte. Well, many neighborhood mothers took umbrage at the implied criticism of how they handled their children. Soon, whispers of a boycott passed among the playgroups in the North Side Chicago neighborhood. And here's a quote from one of the women who has a problem with it. "I love people who don't have children who tell you how to parent," said Allison Miller, 35, a psychologist and corporate coach and mother of two. "I'd love for him to be responsible for two children for the next year and see if he can control the volume of their voices every minute."
Allison Miller, I have four children, and I'm about to tell you how to parent.
And I have none, and I don't care how you parent, but if your kid is screaming next to me, parent elsewhere.
Okay, my kids actually have several different levels of volume that they're allowed to have. There's an inside the car voice. There's an inside the house voice.
There's a church voice.
There's an outside voice. And we have what we call a church voice. And we have what we call also a restaurant voice. And a restaurant voice means it's okay to talk. It's okay to communicate amongst each other. But the other people at the other tables shouldn't hear what you're saying.
Right.
And my kids learned that, and obviously I own a restaurant, but my kids learned that early on, that it doesn't matter if
we're
at a diner.
That's four of them, right? Four of them. You're outnumbered 2-1.
Well, one of them's restaurant voice at 5 months old sometimes is to scream and yell.
Right.
And what do I do when my baby starts to scream and yell? I tell my wife to take her out of the restaurant. I'm just kidding.
You're not just kidding.
I'm in so much trouble right now.
No, the only trouble you're in is the next time you try that, it's not going to work. You blew a really great thing you had going on.
I am equally as nearly equally as likely to take the baby out.
Now you're in trouble. Now you're in trouble. Okay. You weren't in trouble until right that moment. And I take pride in getting you there. Okay, listen.
I'm actually dead. Those of you listening, if I'm not here tomorrow, you know why.
Okay. Here's the deal, though. Look, we all, you know, it's not that we don't understand that sometimes kids have a meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes kids have a meltdown.
Right.
But that's your problem when your kids have a meltdown, not my problem.
And it is a problem. I mean, nobody wants to get up from their elegant dinner. And frankly, I don't usually bring my youngest kids out to an elegant dinner for exactly that reason. I bring them out to less fancy places. I bring them out to places that, with the understanding that if this kid has a meltdown, that I need to get up and leave. And that's just part of
going out with kids.
Going out
part
with
of being
kids.
A parent. It's your responsibility to take responsibility. Look, they're even in the friendlies, there's an acceptable level of mm-hmm. behavior. That's pretty broad. I mean, you can be kind of loud in friendlies. But if I'm in friendlies and your kid is running around my table,
mm-hmm.
you know, and going to smash, you know, my dinner, then you need to, you have responsibility
right.
for your children. Here's more from the restaurateur. He said he's really gotten in a row with the local mom's club, which he calls the protesting adults, former cheerleaders and beauty queens who have a very strong sense of entitlement, in an open letter that he handed out. And he warned of an epidemic of antisocial behavior. He says, part of parenting skills is teaching kids if they behave differently in a restaurant than the playground. If you send out energy that says, I'm the only one that matters, it'll be a pretty chaotic world. Okay, we don't need to get that philosophical, but the idea is you have to. Here's Kim Cavett, another one of the parents who has a problem with a different restaurant that has a similar policy. Kim Cavett recalled having coffee and a cookie one afternoon with her boisterous 2-year-old. One of the employees came over and said, "You need to keep him quiet, or you'll have to leave." We left and we haven't been back since. I'm outraged. You go to a coffee shop to rest, relax, and that you wouldn't have to worry the whole time that your child is doing something that children naturally do. Right, I go there to relax too, and your kid just threw his chocolate milk on me.
Yeah, the other thing is, I think that people don't realize sometimes when you take your kids out to a restaurant. And honestly, Francis and I don't really have this problem in either restaurant.
Never.
Almost never in 14 years. So I can say that most of our customers understand completely what their responsibilities are towards the other patrons. And honestly, your yelling kid doesn't bother me. Except for the fact that it may be bothering somebody else who paid for a babysitter, is having a special night out.
Tried to get away from the kids for a night.
Is having a quiet night out. And if your kid's running up and down the aisles, then you may be infringing on
their. But the restaurant has a responsibility as well.
Yeah.
And the restaurants, we are, when a kid comes in, you move that ticket to the front of the line.
Mm-hmm.
You get those people out as quickly as you can and give them the fastest service you can because their kid may have a meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not against kids, but it's about there are rules. When someone comes in with a kid, there are parameters in which that behavior can happen, and then the restaurant has to work to make that as pleasant an experience as possible if you're going to allow kids at all. But
mm-hmm.
And there are some restaurants, like Nicholas down in New Jersey,
that simply don't allow them.
Don't allow kids.
Right,
but
nobody under
14, 8. Eight years old.
Francis, I think the easiest way to see if somebody wants to have a lot of kids in the restaurant is, do they offer a children's menu?
Or do they offer a high chair,
mm-hmm.
you know, and... And we don't, but because we're mean old men.
We are mean old men.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We're going to be talking with Sam Gugino about Thanksgiving and olive oil in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Sam Gugino. Sam was once the restaurant critic for the Philadelphia Daily News and then food editor of the San Jose Mercury News. He's now safely back in Philadelphia. He's a contributing editor to the Wine Spectator magazine, where his food column Tastes has appeared since 1996. He's authored several books, including Eat Fresh, Stay Healthy and Cooking to Beat the Clock. And one of the most interesting things about Sam is he publishes his own website and newsletter, to which Mark and I subscribe. Hi, Sam.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well, Sam. How are you today?
I'm terrific.
Sam, you said that your career for the last 20 years has been to write, to educate, and to entertain. Which do you think you do more of?
Well, I think you have a hard time educating if you don't entertain, because people then just turn you off.
Yeah, you can't make people stay after school and learn about foie gras.
Right. Fortunately, I write about a topic that a lot of people are interested in, so it makes it easy for it to be interesting, although there are some people who manage to make food writing seem dull.
Yeah.
We have noticed.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had you on once before, primarily to discuss the article you wrote on coffee, which was absolutely one of the best articles on any food product I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Now, when you do research, you don't mess around. I mean, I thought, I got your newsletter, and it was this article on coffee, and it was like 24 pages, and it talked about, and then I went to Africa, and then I was down in the jungle looking at the coffee beans, and I thought, are you a little obsessive, Sam?
I don't think so. I mean, that particular story, Wine Spectator recognized the importance of it. It was a cover story, and so they did send me down to Central America. And the other ones, I just do as much research as I can, given the constraints that I have of space and time.
Well, I was struck more recently by an article you wrote on olive oil, and that may seem to a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people think about, and what I like about reading you is, in our world, you know, people think, oh, I'll have a cup of coffee, and they don't realize, like, all the backstory of what a great cup of coffee is all
about.
How
many steps actually go into the process?
And another ingredient that's very much like that, but, like, supremely important and complex food stuff is olive oil, and you wrote a great article on olive oil. And you were pretty obsessive about that as well. How important is olive oil to American cuisine and to Italian cuisine?
Well, it's very important to Italian cuisine. It's the cornerstone of Italian cuisine. I mean, if you take away olive oil, you don't have much in the way of Italian cuisine, particularly when you go south of Rome. But with American cooking, it's actually becoming more important, because even people who cook regional American cuisine use olive oil just because people sort of expect it, they like the taste, and they recognize the health benefits.
Why did olive oil become the oil that's really important? Why not
why did it beat corn oil out, or canola oil, or regular vegetable oils?
Well, corn oil by its very name doesn't sound very sexy, for one thing. And, you know, Archer Daniels Midland doesn't have this kind of panache that Antonori has and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a couple things. One is that Americans love Italian cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And they've always felt comfortable with it, but in the last 10 to 20 years, Italian cuisine has gotten very chic, in addition to being very approachable. So, and one of the things that there are several things within the Italian cuisine that people have gotten to know as a result of becoming more sophisticated. Prosciutto, Parmigiano, olive oil, all those ingredients, Italy more than France, really focuses in on ingredients. The French seem to focus more on the finished product, but the Italians really focus in on the ingredients, and there's no more important ingredient than olive oil.
So now I think that some of our listeners are presuming that all those Italian olive oils that they're purchasing from the store are actually Italian olive oils. Can you tell us a little bit about
why would they think that?
What to look for?
Well, it's better than it used to be, I'll put it that way. In the old days, you used to get these cans of olive oil that said "product of Italy."
Right.
And that just meant that the oil was packaged in Italy and sent to America.
Mm-hmm.
That oil very often came from Spain, Turkey, Tunisia.
Which are all less expensive places to source olive oil.
All less expensive
places, because the Italians have only a limited capacity for olive oil. So because there's such a demand for Italian olive oil, because some people out there think only Italy makes olive oil, they had to go to these other sources. Fortunately, the International Olive Oil Council, which is sort of the governing body of the olive oil producing nations.
Kind of the OPEC of food oil.
It's OPEC, not quite as belligerent.
And with less power.
Less power, yes. And they have said, look, if you're going to use olive oils from other places, you have to say on the package where those oils came from. And you will now see that on oils from Italy. Now, obviously, there are oils that are made in Italy, but there are a lot of oils, particularly particularly the major brands like Bertolli and those people that come from other places.
Right.
That doesn't mean they're bad olive oils. It just means a little truth in packaging.
Right. Doesn't mean that they are what they say they are. You need to look at that tiny, tiny little fine print on the bottle and see actually where the olive oil, the olives are from.
You know, I grew up...
And it's all over the food industry. People just have to be... I was in the supermarket today shopping for Thanksgiving, and I saw this thing that said, cranberry juice, 100% juice. Now, you look at that and you think, well, it's 100% cranberry juice.
No.
No. It's 100% juice.
Sure. Cranberries are very, very bitter.
Cranberries.
Right, exactly.
Cranberries are really bitter. People don't realize that cranberry juice by itself would be less pleasant to drink.
But the labeling to say 100% juice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I guess it is now, isn't it?
Of course, that's white grape juice.
Right,
exactly.
Right, mostly. Exactly. Well, I'll tell you, I grew up in an Irish American household where the smartest thing was to get an invitation to your Italian friend's house for dinner, and we would substitute. I'll horrify you two Italian gentlemen. Everything, we didn't have olive oil in the house, but any recipe that called for olive oil, they just put in corn oil.
I'm gonna tell you just a quick story, Sam.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I accidentally bought a can of Bertolli olive oil, and my Italian mother scolded me. She said, that's not really Italian. You can't buy that one.
Well, you guys didn't have to deal with the corn oil on your pasta, which is really not very good at all. Let me add my expertise to the discussion. We'll be back in just a moment talking with Sam Gugino about Thanksgiving and olive oil in general. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis from Stage Left Restaurant and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Sam Gugino. He has samcooks.com, which is a great food website, and there's a great newsletter you can subscribe to there. He's also a contributing editor to Wine Spectator magazine, and we've been talking about olive oil. Sam, olive oil is one of those magic ingredients, and it does two things to our mind. It adds its own flavors, but it also seems to brighten up the flavors that exist there already, kind of like salt.
Oh, a little bit like salt.
What are your thoughts on that? Is that?
And that's the kind of olive oil that really is what they call a condiment olive oil,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a cooking olive oil.
Mm.
The Italians cook with the same oil. That's because they have a lot of it. But in this country, if you're spending a lot of money for a condiment oil, it doesn't make sense to saute some onions with that same oil that costs $30 a liter.
Mm-hmm.
Does it cost a lot less in Italy?
I think it does. I know James Suckling, who covers Italian wines for the Wine Spectator, was saying that the Italians use it for everything. So I have to assume that it's cheaper. I haven't really done a price comparison.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you really have to worry about, though, when you're cooking with olive oil is it's got such a low smoking point that you can end up with some burnt olive flavors in your food, and that can be unpleasant.
Yeah, that's true. And smoking points of oils is very important. That's why the Chinese always use peanut oil for their deep frying stuff, because it has a high smoke point.
So what is the difference when you look for it? What's a good olive oil to cook with? I mean, we know that to use a high-end olive oil, a finishing olive oil that you don't cook with, you got to give it a lot of flavor, and you can often wind up spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
What do you look for in an olive oil that you're just going to cook with?
I look for an extra virgin oil from a reliable producer, very often a supermarket brand, that's going to give me some flavor, but that's not going to cost a lot of money because I use it a lot in cooking. So I can use any number of different extra virgin oils, including some of the ones that we mentioned, the larger producers, the Bertolli's or the Calavitas or the Pompeians. The Spanish oils and the Greek oils tend to be very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you're looking either for a cooking oil or for a condiment oil, those are two places I would suggest people check out.
If you are looking for, and I mean, some of these olive oils, and we're going to talk about some of the most expensive olive oils in the world a little bit later in the show, but when you're in the market and you see expensive olive oils, some of it's just a gimmick. Some of it's just marketing a mediocre oil in a beautiful bottle.
Yeah.
But some of it is really worth the extra money. But you wouldn't want to spend the money on one of those super high end olive oils to cook with, not just because it's a waste of money, but because it really, when you cook it, you lose all of the extra special
right.
finesse.
And sometimes it actually changes the flavor of the dish that you're creating, and not necessarily to the good.
Right. You not only lose the flavor, but you also lose a lot of the, at least this is a bit controversial, but a lot of people have told me you lose a lot of the health benefits, too, that a lot of the...
Mm-hmm, the antioxidants break down.
The antioxidants get lost.
Yep, that's exactly right.
We're going to talk more a little bit more about olive oil with Sam Gugino when we come back, and we're also going to talk about some Thanksgiving tips he has for you and your turkey when we return. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kaplan Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Sam Gugino. He was once the restaurant critic for the Philadelphia Daily News and then the food editor of the San Jose Mercury News. He's now safely back in Philly. He's a contributing editor to Wine Spectator magazine, where his food column Tastes has appeared since 1996. He's written several books, and he runs one of our favorite food websites, samcooks.com, and you can go there and subscribe to his newsletter and find out about all this interesting stuff. If you're an egghead and you really like to learn about the food and go all very in-depth, this is exactly the newsletter you need to read. Hey, Sam.
Hi. Don't forget, I was the wine columnist for the Star-Ledger for 2.5 years.
Ah, that's true.
That's right. That's
very,
right.
Very, very
so
true.
Northern Jersey folk.
We have Jersey roots here. I forgot.
Right.
I did forget about that. Well, now, we're talking not about something closely related to wine. We're talking about olive oil. And actually, that's a nice lead-in. Why do people associate wine and olive oil and vineyards and olive trees?
Well, part of it is that overused term terroir. They grow in the same places,
right?
Except if you were in Muslim countries, obviously, then that's not going to happen. But
right, but they would.
They do it, but they don't tell anybody. Yes,
right,
that's true.
Right.
So they just naturally grow together. It's just sort of by tradition and by climate. The difference being that olive trees are more sensitive to cold than grape vines are.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so
some years ago, we were talking about Tuscany. The Tuscans had a major freeze, and oddly enough, that created the profile of the olive oil that we now consider the Tuscan style.
Interesting.
How do you mean?
It's sort of like, you know, how Roquefort became Roquefort because somebody left it in a cave.
Because it went bad, yeah.
Because it went bad. Well, you know, Daryl Cordy, who's a great olive oil aficionado and one of the most knowledgeable people that I know about food in general, once said that the Tuscans took a negative thing and they made it a benefit, and now they're telling the rest of the world this is the way it should be.
So what was the negative thing that defined the Tuscan style that came from the cold snap?
The negative thing was that... in Tuscany in particular, olives tend to grow on hillsides in cooler microclimates.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to pick those olives before it gets too cold.
Right.
And when they pick those olives before it gets too cold, the olives are green. They haven't turned black, and they haven't... So while they're still green, they have this peppery, underripe mm-hmm. quality.
Uh-huh.
That kind of gets you right in the back of the throat.
Right. With grapes, you know, the people are always talking about picking grapes when they're physiologically ripe. Well, with olives, they pick them, at least in Tuscany, before they're physiologically ripe. And the result is, A, you get that green, grassy, herbaceous, mm-hmm. artichoke, cardoon quality. And oddly enough, you do have much higher phenolics.
Mm-hmm.
So it is actually healthier.
Phenolics, define phenolics, Sam.
Phenolics are two things. One is that they do provide a lot of the the health benefits, the antioxidants that you get in both wine and olive oil and other products, and they contribute to the complexity of the taste.
Mm-hmm.
When olives get riper, those phenolics get more muted, and the taste profile gets rounder, sweeter, mellower, less peppery, all the way down to in Puglia, where you get some pretty soft types of olive oil,
which is its own thing,
and not bad.
Yeah,
no.
And I don't want to make people think that's necessarily better or worse because everybody has their own taste.
I do.
I generally prefer the ones that have a little bite or a little burn to them. But while we're talking about temperature and processing a little bit, can you tell us a little bit about cold pressing?
Yeah, well, define some terms for us, Sam.
Sure. Heat is the enemy of a lot of fruits, including grapes.
Mm-hmm.
When you apply heat, you damage those phenolics that we were talking about. And so both in terms of the taste and in terms of the ability of the fruit to stay fresh without oxidizing.
Mm-hmm.
So when cold pressing means that they don't use any heat to extract the oil from the olive.
And that's a more difficult and more expensive way to get the oil out of the olive.
Especially in these hot climates.
Right. It's more laborious. The most basic kind is just the old grinding stone. But even that can generate some heat after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So they've developed a number of different processes, including these slicing knives that go through and all kinds of different things and hammer presses to minimize the heat. Now, when you get to the second stage of extraction for the lower priced oils, then heat is used because you're not getting the same quality of olive oil.
And we're talking with Sam Gugino, author of samcooks.com right now. And Sam, can you tell us a little bit more about the difference between the extra virgin olive oil and plain olive oil and pomace oil and while we're talking about oil qualities and second pressings and the like?
Yeah, extra virgin olive oil has an oleic acid percentage that's less than 1%. And again, that has to do with the higher the acid percentage, the less complex, the less fresh, the less delicate the oil is. And by law, it's less than 1% in all of the olive oil-producing countries.
So when people are out there in the supermarket shelves and they see extra virgin on an olive oil bottle, it actually means something if it's from Italy.
It does mean something, but on the other hand, it's a very broad category.
Mm-hmm.
It's like saying, this wine was made with Cabernet Sauvignon. Well, there's Cabernet Sauvignon, and there's Cabernet Sauvignon.
Right. There's $500 bottle Cabernet Sauvignon, and there's $5
bottle. That's the first hurdle you cross.
Right. And 1% oleic acid is not necessarily, is relatively high.
Well, yeah. For example, you'll see some of the very good ones with 0.04.
Mm-hmm. Right.
0.05,
right.
Things like that. So it is the threshold, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've realized, we decided in this Catherine Lombardi restaurant, which we just opened in downtown New Brunswick, that one of the things we wanted to do was we have no tablecloths on the table, and we wanted olive oil to be out on the table, available for people to use. I've described it as the Italian ketchup. The bottle is on the table. And
I'm sure the Italians don't appreciate that analogy. But
actually, Mark's family thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, because in my family we had 57 varieties of olive oil. So.
What was very interesting is if you leave a bottle out on the table for the sun to come up in the afternoon, it will turn cloudy very quickly. Olive oil, really good olive oil, is very fragile and has to be protected from not only heat but also light. So we use it at night and then we put it away.
Yeah.
Well,
all good products of that nature. The same is true with wine.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
light striking, sure.
You put wine away from heat, away from light. And you want to have a certain degree of humidity if you can, too.
Mm-hmm. one of the things that if you don't use olive oil regularly in your cooking, if it's not the tradition you grew up with, it is amazing to have a great bottle of olive oil to finish dishes with. And very often when you go to a restaurant or you go over someone's house, it's almost unquantifiable. You don't recognize the taste of olive oil, but you say, you know, why is his food always so much better than mine?
Right.
Or why is that food always so great? And it's like a secret weapon. I mean, don't you agree, Sam?
Well, you know, the Italians are very fond. We were talking about ingredients before, and when you just add something like olive oil at the end of a dish, it adds so much, and it's not like you spent 2 hours doing it.
Yeah, I know. It's like a secret weapon. It's like the right amount of salt and good olive oil. Listen, we're going to be talking more with Sam Gugino in just a moment. We're going to be talking about how you can use olive oil on your Christmas turkey, and we're also going to be talking about other tips having to do with Thanksgiving with Sam Gugino in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. And we're here with Sam Gugino, and we're talking about olive oil and Thanksgiving. Now, Sam, when people are out there looking to buy olive oils in the market, we know that on the supermarket shelf there are some really great olive oils today, which is really terrific because that wasn't the case maybe 10 years ago.
Right.
But there's also some stuff in pretty bottles that's like $20 a bottle, and it's just a pretty bottle. How does a consumer tell the difference?
Well, I think the best thing to do with olive oil is what you would do with wine, and that is go to a supplier, a retailer you trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most areas of the country have them now. I was talking about Daryl Cordy. Daryl has a store in Sacramento. He does mail order, too. And that's the other thing that's great, too, about olive oil, is you have people like Daryl Cordy, like the Rare Wine Company, which is down in Sonoma, that does olive oil.
Great company. Great. They import a lot of great wines,
right,
too.
Zingerman's does a lot of good olive oils. Paul Ferrari, who's out in the Bay Area in California, does a lot of good olive oils. If you go to my website, you'll see them listed in the articles on olive oil.
And you can reach Sam's website through our website, which is restaurantguysradio.com. We'll have a link up there later this afternoon.
So, great. Sam, I want you to know that Francis and I are immersing ourselves in our work today.
We're
taking a bath in oil?
Almost.
And not immersing that much. We're having some oil. I want to recommend our own brand, which is...
It's not really our own brand.
Well, right. We don't make the olive oil. New Brunswick's not great for olive trees. At least I don't think it is. But we, in opening this Italian restaurant, we spent about 6 months just trying every olive oil.
Side by side by side by side by side.
And one of the things that we wanted to do was we wanted to have a bottle of really good olive oil on the table.
And finishing olive oil.
And whenever I go to a restaurant that has olive oil on the table, except for Alto, which we went to Manhattan, they had a great, oddly Greek olive oil on the table at Alto. But it was really good. I really liked it.
It was delicious.
The Greeks make some very good olive oil.
Yeah.
But that was at Scott Conant's restaurant in Manhattan where they have olive oil on the table that was great. We weren't going to put an olive oil on the table that was just a pomace oil or flavored with an oregano sprig. Mm-hmm. And it wound up being, you know, a fairly expensive proposition, but we couldn't spend $20 a bottle wholesale to put a good finishing oil on the table.
Well, most the good finishing oils that we were looking at were $30 and $40 for a 750.
But we found one, and here's our little secret weapon. It's called Frantoia, and it's a Sicilian olive oil.
Sure, I know it.
What do you think of it?
It's very good.
Yeah, and it runs like $15 a bottle for a full liter.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a little more than that.
And there are
closer
Frantoia,
to 20.
Olio Verde is another one from Sicily.
Uh-huh.
There are a couple olive oil producers down there, and I was in Sicily last year, and they have successfully mimicked, if that's the right word.
I think that's exactly
Tuscan
the right word.
Style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the way you mimic the Tuscan style is you just pick early, even though it's a much warmer climate.
And remember, olive oil should have flavor. There should be a little burn on the back of your throat when you're talking about a Tuscan or a Tuscan style olive oil.
Right.
Sam, we've only got a few minutes left, but I promised people that we would get some tips from you for Thanksgiving.
Sure.
What do you got for us?
Well, more tips that we have time for, you can go to the website, and I have all kinds of things for Thanksgiving, including my 15 tips for a faster, easier Thanksgiving dinner.
I got mine. I go out to a restaurant.
I got mine. I have this.
Mark's one tip. There you go.
Morris Fabricant said in the Times the other day, turkey dinner in no minutes.
My advice to everyone is buy your own restaurant and have your staff cook your family's dinner.
One of the things that I tell people in these tips is, and it's true for anything that you do with regard to entertaining, holiday or no, and that is organization. If you just take a few minutes to write down what the menu is going to be, mm-hmm. what you're going to serve it with, what you're going to serve it on, what wine, if any, you're going to serve it with, and have all that stuff written out so that, you know, you don't have to worry at the last minute, what am I going to put this in?
Right, or where are the serving utensils?
Or where the serving utensils are. And then I do a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start the timeline. We're now only a couple days away, but you can start the timeline normally a week ahead of time, depending on what it is you're talking about. If you're making a stock, you can do it several days to a week ahead of time. Cranberry sauce can be done several days ahead of time. And then you work right up to the point of serving and doing things as far back as you can, and then working right up to this goes in at this time, this goes in at this time.
You know, I think that one of the interesting things about having a list like that is to actually have a list as well. That way when Aunt Sally turns, comes into the kitchen and says, hey, can I help? What can I do?
Right, you can peel those potatoes. It's 11:43.
That's the other thing, too, is don't be afraid to have people assign people a task.
People,
give somebody the task of opening the wine.
People
give
like
somebody
that.
The task of doing something with the decorations or the hors d'oeuvres.
Especially, you know, you're talking about your friends and your family and the people.
Exactly.
That. So I mean, in my house, it seems like, and I know a lot of people are like this. We're all congregated in the kitchen,
right,
until mealtime, because who's opening the wine, who's getting the glassware, who's peeling the potatoes, who's getting the seafood salad ready.
All the juicy conversation happens in the kitchen anyway.
That's
right.
Right.
Is it that way in your house too, Sam?
Yep.
Now, I want to thank you for coming on the show and taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us the week before Thanksgiving. Are you doing a turkey on Thanksgiving?
I'm doing a turkey. I'm doing a Lancaster County organic turkey.
Nice.
Very nice.
So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you guys have a great holiday and all of your listeners as well.
Hey, you too. Thanks a lot, Sam. We'll send a bunch of people to your website, and they'll get those 15 tips for a better Thanksgiving
again,
from samcooks.com.
That was samcooks.com, and you can get that through restaurantguysradio.com. There'll be a link up to Sam's site.
Take care.
Happy Thanksgiving, Sam.
Bye-bye.
You know, we were talking about olive oil, and one of the nicest gifts I've ever gotten, and I've only gotten this from a couple of different people, a friend of mine who has family in Greece, and mm-hmm. a friend of mine, our friend Anthony Giglio, whose wife's family is in Sicily. And on these two separate occasions, from these two separate people, they came back from abroad, and they gave me like 200 milliliters of like Anthony's grandmother-in-law's mm-hmm. olive oil. And I mean, that was, and they gave it to me like...
That when you talk about gifts, getting something that... You know, you grew your own strawberries and made strawberry preserve. Somebody did that for me just this past summer. Those kinds of things. George Henry does that every year. Sends us some jam from his farm. Those kinds of gifts.
The winemaker in California.
Those kinds of gifts really, to me, are very, very meaningful.
So if you don't know good olive oil, you can go to our website and find some. Frantoia is our favorite. You can go to Sam Cook's website and find some more. It is the secret weapon. It is the secret ingredient. Have some good olive oil around and just splash it on at the end. People won't even know what you did. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey 1450, the time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we were talking about all things olive oil with Sam Gugino. You know, Francis, we were talking about this Frantoia olive oil that we have on the tables of Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. And
which you can buy from us, by the way. Just send us an email and we'll mail you a bottle.
One of the things that I really, really like about this olive oil, or having a really good olive oil on the table, not necessarily this one in particular, but having a really great olive oil on the table, you alluded to it just a moment ago, about finishing the food on the table. We're serving an orecchietti with broccoli rabe and homemade sausage. That comes to the table. You finish it with a little of really good olive oil on the table. The minestrone soup, I had a bowl of minestrone soup, finished with just a tiny little bit of really good olive oil.
Well, we leave the olive oil on the table, and we've asked our staff. You know, people were really shy about using it. They thought it was like decoration or something. Mm-hmm. And so now our staff says, you know, feel free to use the olive oil for the bread or whatever you like. But It's not just for bread.
Right. It doesn't just need to be for the bread.
So, I mean, if you have the piece of fish in front of you, throw a little Frantoia olive, throw a little good olive oil on your food right before you eat it. It's like a condiment. It is a condiment.
Right. I'm much more likely to reach for the olive oil in Catherine Lombardi restaurant than I am for the salt.
Well, and the thing is, a lot of restaurants give the olive oil on the table a bad name because, let's face it, good olive oil is pretty expensive. And this is pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, cheap olive oil is not expensive, but it doesn't taste like anything. So,
right.
So why do it?
But you use about a third the amount of this olive oil as you would necessarily need to use of a cheap olive oil.
And
get a ton more flavor.
Well, and I don't think you get any flavor at all from mediocre olive oil. You just get more mediocre flavor, you know? And what's the point of that? I'm all about the quality, you know what I mean? But the other thing about it is, you know, people say, oh, well, I don't want so much oil in my food. The food's so much heavy. Listen, that's how people used to think a long time ago. Olive oil is not butter. Olive oil is actually good for you.
Right.
And
no guilt here. No guilt at all.
There is
Enjoy.
Some controversy about cooking in olive oil that it may actually become not – it may lose its beneficial qualities and also become –
lose the antioxidants.
And also may become bad for you when you heat it.
Mm-hmm.
But raw
like
olive
all
oil,
oils. Like all oils, when the more you heat them, the worse for you they get.
But raw olive oil is good for you. Mm-hmm. So don't be shy. You know,
we said something earlier in the show. So I think that bears repeating as well. Keep your olive oil out of the light. Keep it out of hot places.
Don't put it in the refrigerator.
Don't put it in the refrigerator. You don't want it too cold either. You can do damage to olive oil just like you can do damage to wine. So just especially if you're going to have your olive oil around for a long time, you want to protect that olive oil. Another thing is we talked about going to the supermarket. Supermarkets very frequently have these tiny little bottles of olive oil. If you really want to experiment and see what olive oil in the supermarket you really like, some of these little bottles are $3, $4, $5. Buy 4 or 5 of them, but don't, instead of buying the 6-liter can of something and saying, oh, I don't really like this, buy 4 or 5 of these little bottles and do a side-by-side taste test.
And don't be afraid to do that side-by-side taste test. Professional olive oil tasters put the olive oil in little wine glasses and they drink it like wine. They take a smaller amount, but they drink it like wine because it's about the smell and it's also about the burn on the back of your throat. And a good Tuscan or a Tuscan-style olive oil, and Frantoia is a Tuscan-style olive oil from Sicily, should burn the back of your throat. Take a teaspoon of it and swallow it. It's not medicine. It's good for you.
And you shouldn't just taste it. You should also feel it.
Yeah, and you should feel it come up on the back of your throat and give you a little bit of heat. And at Thanksgiving, put it on the turkey, especially if you got one of those dried-out turkeys and you went over your mother-in-law's house. Bring a little in your suitcase in your pocket, pull out the good olive oil and pour it on the turkey and on the stuffing. It'll be great. You've spent another hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.